This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of November 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 12th of November, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Vision for City Park unveiled, bus ticket overhaul to launch in county, and pump house revamp plans come under fire. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was Vision for City Park unveiled. Greater access to the river, a permanent cafe, and a possible name change all form part of a major scheme for Winchester's biggest park. Since 2018, Winchester City Council has been engaging with the public and stakeholders on plans for the future of the 30-acre North Walls Recreation Ground. Earlier this year, the council unveiled initial ideas for the green space, but now a final park plan has been produced and was being discussed at the town forum last night. The planning document said, "The recreation ground will be facing new challenges as a result of the relocation of the leisure centre. The council was therefore looking to commission a consultant team to develop a vision into a new design for the recreation ground. Following feedback, some ideas have been thrown out, including the sculpture observation tower, pop-up mini golf, new park canopy incorporating solar-powered shade structures, and painting the banana bridge yellow. Discussing the tower, the plan stated, as a result of lack of support due to concerns raised about a landmark fitting in with the character of the recreation ground, potential antisocial behaviour, cost, and loss of green space, the tower proposals have been dropped. The scheme will not only include greater amenities, but also a new name, with a recommendation to name the space River Park to better reflect the qualities of the site. One of the popular ideas was for a multifunctional space with toilets, benches, and a coffee van. This aspect has been upgraded to include a permanent cafe and toilet building. It will be sited in the area referred to as the plaza, but the council has said that proposals for this part of the park will need to consider flood risk. The future of the park is also expected to include greater access to the river. The council has decided that access will be given along the middle river within the recreation ground, away from the nature reserve to the east. In this location, there will be a children's paddling area, and to the north, two dipping platforms, which will be for activities such as net dipping, while providing a spot to enjoy the views. The perimeter track has remained from the initial plans, but has been amended to show links to the gravel path and the main entrance. The plan added, as a multifunctional and intergenerational space, the recreation ground contributes towards the character, diversity, and distinctiveness of the city landscape. It is used for a wide variety of purposes by many people, groups and organisations of all ages. This park plan recommends an overarching strategy for taking improvements to the recreation ground forward over the next 5 to 10 years. The park plan is a living document and will adapt and change to take account of new information and to prepare and deliver an annual action plan. It sets out clearly the priorities for the key stakeholders and wider community at this time. The plan was due to be discussed on Wednesday evening after the Chronicle went to press.
Bus ticket overhaul to launch in county. Bus tickets in Hampshire could soon be used to travel on any bus you like. Currently, if passengers chooses a ticket with specific bus company, the ticket is only valid for those buses, even if other travel on similar route. But Hampshire County Council is proposing to introduce multi-operator bus tickets, which could allow people to seamlessly travel between First Stagecoach and Blue Star services, amongst others. The plans were put forward as part of the council's bus service improvement plan, which was approved by Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Lead Member for Economy, Transport and Environment. It is hoped that these plans, which also include giving buses more priority routes in major towns. Councillor Humby said, "We are fortunate in Hampshire to have a long-standing, strong track record of working closely in partnership with bus operators in our local authority area, which prior to COVID-19 saw the County Buck national trends with the number of bus passengers increasing year on year. The commitments laid out in these proposals are subject to the County Council's securing further funding from the Department of Transport via the Bus Back Better scheme. At the moment, only Solent Go tickets can be used with different operators. Bus operators themselves are on board with the proposals." Mark Reedy, Managing Director of First Hampshire, Dorset and Berkshire, said, "First Bus is very supportive of the government's ambition to outline the national bus strategy and to improve bus services and increase the number of people travelling by bus across the county. We will continue to work with Hampshire County Council in final proposals and deliver a compelling offer for customers in Hampshire. Multi-operator ticketing has been placed across the South Hampshire for over 17 years with the Solent Go ticket, which allows one ticket to be used across multiple bus operators for travelling on a single day or a longer duration. This plan will hopefully expand these options further with a wider range of tickets which can be used across multiple operators." A spokesman from the Stagecoach South said, "We are proud of our continued positive partnership with the Hampshire County Council, and we are committed to working together to deliver sustainable, reliable and affordable bus travel in Hampshire."
And our, excuse me. And our third story is titled, "The Pump House Revamp Plans Have Come Under Fire." Plans for a historic Winchester building to be converted into, quote, "a sophisticated grocery store" have come under fire from neighbours and its former owners. Alex Dunham and Laura Turner applied for a premises licence for the pump house in Garnier Road, St Cross, to transform it into, quote, "an independent, upmarket, retail cafe, retail and bar concept that will be appealing to couples, tourists, families and commuters," according to their application. The pair are the co-founders of the General Store Winchester in the Square. Now, 38 objections to the application have been made public, as the proposed scheme is set to go before the Winchester City Council's licensing subcommittee on Monday. The Victorian building was previously owned by Southern Water, but in recent years has been offices for a public relations firm. Chris Rowley, Senior Estates Manager at Southern Water, said, "The applicant should already be aware that Southern Water operates a wastewater pumping station to the rear of their property, and we are concerned that there will be an increased risk to the public due to their increased numbers in the area and our need to access our site at all times." He added, "That is to say, offering alcohol for consumption could encourage too much of a relaxed atmosphere, leading to customers parking, walking, or sitting on or around the access to the pumping station, thus putting them, and possibly staff working at the cafe, at unacceptable risk of getting too close to heavy tankers and other vehicles entering or leaving our site." Pump house neighbour Hannah Simmons of Garnier Road wrote to the council, "The site is unsuitable for drinking alcohol. It is a working waterworks with access by Southern Water, often in response to flooding or when there is heavy rain. Large lorries pumping sewage need 24-hour access to the back of the pump house, and increases in members of the public and their cars on this site will compromise safety and the function of the site. Lorraine D'Souza of Kingsgate Road said, "It's a very busy and narrow road with a pinch point and already has a number of parking restrictions in place. The opening of the Handlebar Cafe on St. Catherine's Hill has already resulted in more traffic and overspill parking on Garnier Road, and the addition of a venue selling alcohol will surely increase the number of cars coming to the area." Concerns were also raised about the impact of the premises on the site of importance for nature, conservation, Closentum Fen and Keats Walk. The report to councillors also states that Hampshire Constabulary made a representation against the application in relation to the prevention of crime and disorder licensing objective. And during the consultation, and during the consultation period, a number of conditions relating to CCTV were agreed. The representation was withdrawn. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the pump house in St. Cross, which is a beautiful building.
Thank you. And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. And then Christian comment, letters, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarin. So the death announcements this week. Evans, Samuel Arthur Evans, who died at home on the 1st of November, aged 77. Lynch, Vera Lynch, née Paris, who died on the 30th of October. And Smith, Alison Mary Smith, died peacefully at Sunrise Winchester on the 28th of October, aged 96. And now, Andrew, I think we have a Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church. And it's entitled, "Embrace the Waiting." I can get really frustrated sitting in traffic. I would rather keep moving on a longer route than just sit still going nowhere, even though Google Maps tells me it's still the quickest option. That restlessness is real, but it's also something that I'm trying to learn how to embrace. As well as being incredibly disruptive, lockdown felt like a very long season of waiting. We were waiting to be allowed out of the house, to go back to work and to gather in social groups. We were waiting for the kids to go back to school and waiting to see our families and friends. We were waiting for the numbers to go down and for the vaccine to be ready. Many of us were waiting to grieve our loved ones properly, and some of us still are. Even now, in our post-lockdown semi-twilight world, it still feels like we are waiting. We're out and about, doing our best to get on with our lives, but we are still waiting for uncertainty to be over, for anxiety to dissipate, and for the numbers to stay under control. We are waiting for a vaccine booster, an end to all the disruption, and a return to joy and freedom. But how we are waiting? How does our waiting posture affect the rest of our lives and those around us? Are we calm and centered, or are we, honestly, stressed and anxious? Like many, I felt as if much of my life was put on hold in the pandemic. There were so many things I wanted to make progress on in 2020, but simply couldn't because COVID kept us more fully occupied. Now, while processing the disappointment and frustration of waiting, I find that actually God has been using this time all along to teach me some valuable lessons. In the waiting, I find I have actually been growing in patience and character and in trust and dependence on God and others. I have been forced to learn to take my eyes off myself. Paul describes this in Romans 8, and in his paraphrase, The Message, Eugene Peterson writes about how we are engaged in the waiting. Waiting does not diminish us any more than waiting diminishes a pregnant mother. We are enlarged in the waiting. We, of course, don't see what is enlarging us. But the longer we wait, larger we become, and the more joyful our expectancy. Romans 8:24-25, the message. Depending on our exercise routine, it's possible that we may have actually become physically larger in lockdown. But it's hard not to have grown spiritually through such a challenging season. For me, I am realizing that in this time, I have grown a much larger trust and resilience, and hopefully character, as I keep being reminded that I am not in control. We are not really back to normal yet. But rather than stay frustrated, I'm trying to patiently embrace the waiting.
Okay, now we move on to the letters, please, Nikki.
And this is from Simon Levas, headed Smart M3. Sir, spending £139 million on a smart motorway between the Junction 9 A34 interchange and Junction 14 at Southampton on the M3 is naive, and smart motorways are a proven danger to life, Chronicle November 4. A queue of traffic on the inside lane would not be able to suddenly divert to another lane should a vehicle break down or there was an accident. Regardless of how many cameras and radar exist, such a system cannot visualise the future. Without a hard shoulder, there is nowhere to go. Fact. All motoring organisations are against further development of smart motorways. They have been ignored. They represent drivers. National highways do not. National highways, as they now call themselves, must know the dangers, but against common sense continue to build smart motorways against overwhelming opposition from organisations and people with common sense. The only reason smart motorways were initiated was to add an extra lane at lower cost. It seems that national highways can continue without opposition to their proven life-threatening plans. Their seemingly Orwellian terminology will not alter the proven fact, or proven fact, that smart motorways cause more deaths. Fact. Smart motorways construction must cease immediately. Sadly, not one executive at Highways Britain has been held to account over the deaths that have already been directly related to smart motorways, nor the increasing deaths that will result the denial of reality. There is much talk. Now it is time to take action. Simon Lever, Juniper Coast, Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Noise progress. Sir, I wrote to you last month calling for all the stakeholders to work together to help address the issue of antisocial motorbike noise and speeding on our roads. I am delighted to report that there were two announcements at the meeting of Hampshire County Council last week that suggested progress was being made. First, following a meeting between the Police and Crime Commissioner and Hampshire County Council, the police are developing proposals for limited sections of average speed cameras on the A272 and the A32. Hampshire County Council will work with them to implement this and examining complementary signing to encourage considerable riding. Secondly, the County Council are to consider reducing speed limits in residential areas of towns and villages to 20 miles per hour. More details are to follow, but the principle will be welcomed by many in rural areas. These are important first steps, but there is still a long way to go. Let's in particular see Winchester City Council and East Hants District Council make urgent progress on acoustic cameras. And that was from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, Upper Meon Valley Ward, Winchester City Council, High Street, Meonstoke.
And this letter is a call for an ice rink at North Walls, and it's been written in by Edna Bowden, who is a representative of the Winchester Ice Sports Association. Sir, it has just been announced that both the Winchester and Southampton Christmas ice rinks have been scrapped yet again. What a disappointment for the tens of thousands of skaters that have enjoyed many hours on the ice, albeit for only a few weeks over the Christmas period. If we had a permanent ice rink on the south coast, these thousands of people could skate for 52 weeks of the year and not be reliant on hoping that some organisation could come up with the site, finances and resources needed to install a temporary ice rink over the festive period. Perhaps when the University of Southampton developed their proposals for the River Park site, they could seriously consider including a permanent ice rink in their plans. And that's accompanied by a super photograph of the Winchester Cathedral choristers dressed in their magnificent red outfits, skating on the ice rink in the beautiful grounds of the cathedral.
And this one headed Waking Danger, Stephen Percy. Sir, the handbook for corrupt governments to cling on to power is well understood by unscrupulous politicians. First, throw honest dissenters out of the party and appoint a cabinet of incompetent toadies. Next, bypass Parliament or suspend it if it gets too uppity. Above all, avoid scrutiny by legislating to limit the right of the courts to challenge executive decisions, covering up corruption, appointing cronies to public positions and undermining the independence of public broadcasters and other public servants. Break the law, but never apologise. Tell lies every day until people can't be certain about where the truth lies. Accept dodgy donations to buy the support of friendly media and make it more difficult for opponents to vote in elections. And claim to engage with the people's priorities whilst feathering your own nest. Shockingly, the Johnson government has enthusiastically embraced all of these strategies in the past 2 years, moves which have been happily endorsed by their supine MPs. Presumably they believe that the electorate won't notice, won't understand or won't care. The danger for us is that we might wake up one day to discover that we live in a very different country from the one we thought we were living in. And that's from Stephen Percy in Easton.
Questions for MP. Sir, last week you published letters about MP Steve Bryan's vote against the amendment which would have stopped the dumping of sewage in our rivers and seas, seemingly against his concern for the environment. His published explanation was that the amendment needed a full assessment of its impact and cost. It would be irresponsible to vote for something so hastily drawn up. Rather awkwardly for Mr. Bryan, the government then U-turned. This week, Steve has voted to tear up the rules governing parliamentary standards. This time, contradicting his earlier sewer logic, he seems to have had no hesitation in voting for an amendment hastily drawn up with far-reaching consequences. The government has now backtracked, but what was Mr. Bryan thinking? Will he publish another explainer? In his 2019 election campaign material, Mr. Bryan described himself as principled. Perhaps he can also explain whether his votes were online, in line with his principles, and whether he stands by the position he took, or whether he's just a government lackey. And that was from Charles Tallock, Berwick Avenue, Week, Winchester.
And here's another letter on the subject of the moment, which is the redevelopment of the River Park Leisure Centre. It's titled, Bad Proposal. Sir, you report that Councillor Kelsey Learney of Winchester City Council Portfolio Holder for Housing and Asset Management has decreed that the site of the redundant River Park Leisure Centre should be handed to the University of Southampton, on terms that are far from clear, but will lead to a 150-year lease, in effect a freehold. The site would not revert to the people of Winchester until long after any of us are around. Before that happens, there are many questions to ask, including which of these is more appropriate for the sensitive site between the conservation area of Hyde and the nature reserve of Winnall Moors. Southampton University doesn't seem to have any obvious plans for the site other than a bit of Southampton in Winchester. There is nothing about expansion into Winchester on its estate's webpage. The first image here is taken from that page and shows a building planned for the campus in Southampton. There are several other buildings of similar style and proportion, and anyone who has seen the campus lately will know what development there looks like. The second image is of Chagford Lido in Devon, one of over 100 Lidos in the UK. This one is fed by the River Tyne, the water cleaned and filtered. It was built in the 1930s for the benefit of the public and to discourage people from swimming in the river and disturbing fishermen. Its setting with trees and hills is particularly lovely. Commentators online who express a wish to have the performance venue and other goodies suggested by Southampton University could equally press to have these provided on that other famous development site, Silver Hill. Why should Councillor Learney, who is looking for a developer for that site, not propose that to the university? It isn't far. After all, the University of Winchester has two campuses and students manage to move between them. It's also big enough to provide the student housing that otherwise risks turning Abbots Barton into another Stanmore with the loss of family housing. This is a bad proposal, which councillors should reject. And that letter is from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And the last letter is headed Solar Homes from Richard Gibson. Sir, climate change and the need for real action is very much in the news this week. Why then do I fail to spot any solar panels being fitted to the new houses being built by Carla Holmes in King's Barton? I did see some solar water heating panels on some of the houses, but that's not enough. It's a wasted opportunity, since it's much cheaper to install solar PV panels when you're building houses rather than retrofitting them later. They should also not be optional extras. I would be delighted to hear that Carla Holmes are actually installing high-tech panels which just look like normal tiles and slates, and that's why I don't see them. But I don't think that's likely. Perhaps the Winchester MP, Steve Brine, who's recently taking on the role as net zero champion for green homes, might like to pursue this with Carla Holmes. And that letter was from Richard Gibson, North Walls, Winchester.
Good idea to drop Park Sculpture Tower. A week after Winchester City Council disappointed many with its proposal to convert a public building, River Park Leisure Centre, into a semi-private development for the University of Southampton, it has published a plan for the nearby North Walls Recreation Ground. On the whole, it would appear this is going to get a better reception. Offbeat ideas for a sculpture tower, new gateway entrances and shelters topped with solar panels have been dropped, sensibly. They would have been more suited to a park in inner city London than by the edge of a nature reserve. Sadly, the nice idea to paint the banana bridge a bright yellow, as apparently it used to be many decades ago, has also been jettisoned, if only for now. In the wake of the disappointment for the Lido campaigners, the idea to make it easier to swim in the River Itchen is a nice one. Many people over the age of 50 will have had experience of freshwater swimming. But since the 1970s, with the rise of indoor swimming pool, that pleasure has been lost. To bring it back for youngsters is to be welcomed.
Thank you, Norma. We have first person, I think.
Yes, and They're Not Laughing Now by Khalid Aziz. The late great comic Bob Monkhouse coined the memorable one-liner, "They laughed when they said I wanted to be a comedian. Well, they're not laughing now." I rather hope that the Prince of Wales was channeling his inner Bob Monkhouse as the delegates of the COP26 listened to him with rapt attention on the future of our planet. He's been saying all this for more than four decades, suffering all the tabloid nonsense of the prince who talks to plants, etc. Now he's surely vindicated. Unusually, a foreign premier, Italy's Mario Draghi, invited Prince Charles to address the G7 meeting being hosted in Rome in advance of the much larger Glasgow Caravanserai. All this shows the value of having a mixed economy when it comes to movers and shakers. Not just politicians and princes, but living saints too, like Sir David Attenborough. In their keynote speeches, giving it to the delegates between the eyes, rather than overshadowing bumbling Boris, who as usual bluffed his way through, surely questioning his title as a communications king. Tyro Saint, Greta Thunberg, repeated her somewhat aggressive blah, blah, blah trope, which hardly added to the sum of total global understanding. What she doesn't seem to get, or more likely refuses to admit, is the age-old conundrum facing all politicians. It is not that they don't know what to do, it's just that they don't know how to do it and get re-elected. By the time you read this, progress will have been made. Certainly attitudes are shifting. People around me get the idea of eating less meat to help the planet. Even a confirmed savage meat eater like me found himself ordering a vegetarian lasagna the other day. It was underwhelming. I know that when I eat out in an Indian restaurant, I tend to go for the veg rather than the meat, which can sometimes prove to be of doubtful providence. By last weekend, the COP had reached agreement on 1.8 degrees as a sustainable increase in global warming, not far off the target set by the pointy-bearded scientists of 1.5 degrees. All this against a background of overwhelming acceptance of the principle of global warming. It looked like we had seen the last of climate denier back into his box. I thought we hadn't heard much for months from Nigel Lawson, former Chancellor and Knight Grand Arch of the Order of Climate Sceptics. Then, up he pops in The Spectator, suggesting that it was all climate scaremongering, and anyway, it's good to have a bit of warming as so many people die of cold-related conditions. What COP26 has proved is that it's time for cool heads. The arts-dominated media, as usual, struggled. The desperate headline that they were more delegates representing fossil fuel interests than any individual country is pathetically sloppy journalism. A moment's thought, and we are saying, of course they are. Fossil fuels are burned in over 200 countries representing, so there is more representation. They are part of the problem, and with their resources, they will be part of the solution. But they are not. What they are not is the devil's incarnate. As ridiculous organisations such as Insulate, more accurately Irritate, Britain suggests, like Extinction Rebellion, they have served their cause hopelessly by gluing themselves to roads and causing disruption. Remember the politician's dilemma about getting re-elected? These clowns would be well advised to think things through a bit. Strange to tell, not everyone has time or the affluence to get up to annoying antics. They have children to look after, living to earn, and they don't like having to negotiate, quite literally, man-made bumps in the road. Time for these protesters to desist and let the grown-ups get on with fixing things. They have made their point. To keep banging on and on will lead to right-thinking people to believe that they're just one-trick ponies with, just like Miss Thunberg, nothing much more to add to the argument.
And this is this week's Belgarum, which is an alternative look at the news. And if you'll allow me to insert an editorial comment here, I'll give you a spoiler alert. This story contains good news. It is titled, Animals Enjoy a Halloween Treat. There was a hive of activity at a Winchester college as students and technicians prepared Halloween-themed pumpkin enrichment activities for the resident animals. From Sparsholt's resident exotic species like the red pandas and dwarf crocodiles to the snakes and scorpions inside the college's reptile houses, it was great to see all the different species interacting with some spooky treats and exploring their newly decorated enclosures. The pumpkins were kindly donated from Sparsholt's residential students this year, after their annual pumpkin carving competition took place before the October reading break took place. Some of the pumpkins were also carved by the technicians at Sparsholt's BIAZA Licensed Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre, alongside students who signed up to volunteer at these facilities over the half-term break. Over 600 animals across over 100 different species reside at Sparsholt's countryside campus. Everything from common pets like rabbits and guinea pigs to endangered species like red pandas and lemurs, usually only seen in zoos. All receive carefully balanced diets based on their nutritional needs and with additional novel items to act as enrichment to make life as interesting as possible for them. And in this case, Halloween pumpkins. And this is accompanied by three magnificent photographs. There's one of Maya, the red panda, tasting his pumpkin. There's another shot here of smaller pumpkins making great enrichments for the snakes. And then finally, there's a rather fine-looking reptile here. And he's eyeing up, I'm not sure whether he's eyeing up the pumpkin or he's eyeing up the photographer. It's entitled The Spooky Enrichment for the Residents of the Reptile House.
Nice story there. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 12th of November at 7:16 a.m. Excuse me. And begins at 4:22 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of November, it ends at 7:24 a.m. and begins at 4:16 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this is headed Classic Remedies to Relieve the Effects of Winter Colds and Flu. There's a wonderful picture of all sorts of things that contain zinc, actually, mushrooms and almonds and some sort of spices. Looks like chickpeas. It's either lobsters or écrevisses, I'm not sure. Avocados, greens, pumpkin seeds, and what could be either bacon or ham, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, always curious about ways to combat infections like colds and flu. Zinc is the latest mineral in the spotlight. A new study has found taking a daily zinc supplement may cut how long respiratory infections last. It is important to note that the research, which reviewed 28 existing studies, did not include data specific to COVID-19, but respiratory tract infections, RTIs, can include common cold, flu, sinus, throat and lung infection symptoms, like coughs, stuffed and runny noses, headaches, high temperatures and associated pain. Published in the journal BMJ Open, it found people who regularly took zinc had less RTIs overall and their symptoms cleared up more quickly when they did. Heading, chicken soup. Even if you've never had a loved one prepare chicken soup for you when bunged up with a cold, you've probably seen it happen on TV. And there is a logic to this tradition. Chicken soup is packed with phytonutrients found in garlic, onions and other veg, and great for supporting immune function and anti-inflammatory properties. Vitamin C. Popping some extra vitamin C when you are run down with an infection is another classic, whether through supplements, fruit or juice. Studies have looked at whether this actually works, but overall there is no solid evidence it does. That's not to say vitamin C isn't very important and helpful for healthy immune systems. That much is clear. We also need it for our bones, skin and absorbing iron. Spices. Spices feature heavily in many traditional medicine and healthcare systems, including Ayurveda from India, while small spices can pack a mighty punch in terms of health-promoting properties. When it comes to immune function and anti-inflammatory goodness, key examples are turmeric, cinnamon, and ginger. In fact, ginger is known to be excellent for soothing the stomach and combating nausea too, which could be handy if a bout of flu leaves you feeling unsettled and sickly. And finally, honey. This natural sweetener has been widely lauded for giving health-giving antimicrobial and antibacterial properties. Mixing a cup of honey and lemon tea when you're full of cold or feeling one coming on is an age-old remedy. Research has also found that honey may help reduce cough symptoms.
GP appeal over restrictions on COVID-free speech. A GP ordered not to discuss COVID-19 pandemic on social media after he had been accused of spreading misinformation online faced a severe restriction on his freedom of speech, the High Court had heard. Dr. Samuel White is appealing against the interim conditions of his registration with the General Medical Council following complaints about a video he posted on Instagram and Twitter in June. In a 7-minute clip, he discussed why he could only work in a previous role because the lies about the NHS and government approach to the pandemic, which were so vast, he could no longer stomach or tolerate them, the court was told. He also raised concerns about the safety of the COVID-19 vaccine treating methods and claimed must not nothing. Dr. White, a partner in Demi practice until he resigned in February, he thought his High Court challenge against the GMC to quash restrictions imposed on him, which included barring him from sharing his views relating to the pandemic on social media. His barrister, Francis Hoare, told the hearing, "This is a claim about freedom of expression of a doctor, in particular his freedom to engage in a medical, scientific and political debate and discussion." The court was told Dr. White's video triggered complaints that it allegedly contained misinformation, and the GMC referred him to the interim order tribunal to consider restrictions. In August, the tribunal concluded that Dr. White way of sharing his views may have real impact on a patient's safety, adding any doctor who is responsibility to provide sufficient and balanced information about COVID-19 to allow any potential patient and other members of the public to assess the potential risks and benefits of any treatment or preventative measures under the consideration and then make an informed choice. Alexis Herndon of the GMC said in written arguments that there were multiple complaints about Dr. White's video, including from members of the medical profession, the judge saying he would deliver his judgment at a later date. And there's a picture of Dr. Samuel White appealing against his conditions imposed on him.
And this article is titled "The Police Talk Crime with Farmers." Rural crime and emerging trends in organised crime topped the agenda when two farming and rural organisations met Hampshire and Isle of Wight police. Representatives of the National Farmers Union and the CLA Landowners Association met Chief Constable Olivia Pinckney and the rural policing team on Monday, October the 26th, near Upham, courtesy of farmer Mark Dunford. discussions on legislative changes to combat dog attacks on livestock and tackle the scourge of hare coursing were upbeat. But the two organizations raised serious concerns about organized crime, notably the theft of high-value, high-tech GPS kits that are being shipped abroad by criminal networks and sold in Europe. Hampshire and Isle of Wight NFU advisor James Fitzgerald said, "The theft of expensive GPS systems by organized criminals is sadly fast becoming a regular occurrence." During the meeting, host farmer Mark Dunford made it very clear to police how GPS thefts were highly disruptive to farming operations, given the delays in replacing stolen kit. There was a productive discussion on self-help measures being adopted by farmers to deter thieves and police recognition of the severity of the impacts arising from these thefts. We also help police to better understand the frustration farmers feel at fly tipping and illegal access. Tim Bamford, CLA South East Regional Director, said, "It was a positive meeting which highlighted the very real impact crime has on rural businesses and communities across Hampshire. It was good to hear the Chief Constable's commitment to staff resourcing and her speedy work recruiting new members to the team. The CLA is committed to working with our partners to help tackle rural crime, and we urge farmers, businesses, and the wider public to report all incidents so that police can build a more complete picture and then allocate appropriate resources." The meeting included a discussion on the performance of the rural policing team and successful prosecutions over the past year.
Criticism over work to damage tree. A large tree in a Winchester park has been cut back this week, despite an expert reportedly saying it was not necessary. The beach at Oramzaba was reduced last Friday, leaving local man Tim Montague and his children very disappointed. The tree was cut to 10 feet above the fork where its split had occurred after a storm, leaving a 20-foot stump. On the morning of the tree work, Mr. Montague's children, Amelia, 10, and Theo, 6, hugged it to say goodbye. Mr. Montague told the Chronicle what a local tree expert had said about the work. A local tree specialist has stated that a reduction of 50%, including the large bough leading towards the neighbouring house, would suffice and still leave the tree the ability to regenerate and survive for decades more. This is a case of poor tree management by the council over a number of years. Large trees should be checked and pruned more frequently to prevent large boughs breaking and such excessive measures being needed. Similar work has been done in recent days to a beech tree on the Weirs. The City Council has been asked for comment, and there's a very nice picture of the two children saying farewell to the poor tree, which must be 4 or 5 feet in width. I mean, it's a really big tree, before it is cut down by the City Council, and local residents dispute the need for such drastic action.
Young people invited to learn ancient skills at Action Day. Young people from Southampton and Winchester area are being offered the chance to enjoy a day of hedge laying in the South Downs National Park. Anyone aged 16 to 25 can take part in the free Youth Action Day, which will involve learning the ancient skill of laying a hedgerow. Amanda Elms, who leads the learning and outreach for the National Park Authority, said, "Hedgerows are vital habitats for wildlife, but sadly over 50% of them have been lost since the 1950s. We need to take action to bring them back. This is a great opportunity if you're interested in learning about wildlife and also getting some exercise in the beautiful setting. It's entirely free and no experience is necessary, and all costs are covered, including transport to the location, which can be claimed back. There are 4 days to choose from, November the 16th, 17th, 18th and 19th, and the work will take place around Selborne near Alton. Reserve a spot at www.southdowns.gov.uk/volunteering/South Downs Youth Action. And there's a picture of a young lady. She looks about 16, 17, chopping back all the hedgerow, and there's a couple of more mature gentlemen showing her how to lay down the hedge.
Excuse me. This story is an advance notice of one of the one of the greatest activities that we have at Christmas time, which is the activities around the cathedral in Winchester. Christmas events are fast approaching, with the cathedral organising the famous market and festive services. The market is returning along with carol services, a service to celebrate the start of Advent, and the big dress-up nativity. Opening on November the 19th, the Christmas market is renowned for its unique location and bustling atmosphere. As reported, this year it will be without its ice rink, which has been replaced by a performance stage to allow easier social distancing. A range of festive food and drink will be on offer, including mulled wine, churros and roasted chestnuts, and visitors will also have the opportunity to enjoy live local music. Acts from across Hampshire, including choir groups, community bands, school choirs, city buskers and jazz groups, will come together to perform on the stage to entertain festive visitors. The first Christmas service this year is the Advent Procession, a spectacular service of darkness and light to celebrate the start of Advent at 6:30 p.m. on November the 27th. The cathedral carol services will be music sung by the cathedral choir, and traditional Christmas readings, and those will be on December the 20th, 21st and 23rd. The big dress-up nativity will be on Christmas Eve at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Alison Evans, the chief operating officer at the cathedral, said, "We are delighted to announce the return of the Christmas market to Winchester Cathedral this year. The market is a huge attraction, which many visitors look forward to, so we've made a few changes in order to keep all the traders and the public safe. The Christmas market will have something for everyone, with the many unique gifts and treats on offer from the wide variety of chalets, along with live performances and additional space for visitors to safely relax with delicious food and drinks in the historic grounds of the cathedral. The return of the market is also an opportunity to put the difficulties and challenges of last year behind us and to be able to look forward to a wonderful and hopeful Christmas."
New cafe set to open. It will be pink and flower-themed. A cafe in Winchester is set to be given a new lease of life and a colour change. James Ashby has applied to Winchester City Council to paint 2829 St Thomas Street, formerly Café Winchester, pink. The premises is currently undergoing a refit to open in mid-November as a brunch cafe bar named Ashby's. Mr. Ashby has said that the cafe will be pink and flower-themed, similar to that of Peggy Portion in Belgravia, London. Ahead of submitting the application, Mr. Ashby consulted with Winchester Conservation Team and Winchester City Council Principal Planning Officer Robert Green and discussed various shades to consider. The application said, "We have undertaken some research of other buildings painted pink in Winchester and ensured the shade of pink is in keeping with them." Speaking on Ashby's Instagram page, Mr. Ashby said, "Ashby's has been something I've been dreaming of creating for many years. There's a picture of the old original building looking rather bashed and sort of rather a dingy green. And then I presume it's a mock-up of what Ashby's will look like, which is absolutely wonderful. It's the softest pink, but everything's pink. The umbrellas, the flowers, the tables, the chairs. I think it will be a rather exciting addition to Winchester."
Garden of Remembrance. A short service took place at the Cathedral Close on Tuesday to open the public Garden of Remembrance. The garden is in an area which allows anyone to pay respects to people who have died in war. Members of the Royal British Legion and the City Council and Winchester Cathedral were in attendance, as well as members of the public. The proceedings were led by the Cathedral Vice Dean, Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream, who said a prayer. two buglers started 2 minutes of the silence by playing the last post. The Mayor, Councillor Vivian Ashwell, and Deputy Mayor, Councillor Derek Green, were the first to lay crosses, followed by members of the Royal British Legion. Chris George, the chairman of the Winchester Legion branch, said the Garden of Remembrance for the general public to place crosses in memory of family members and all those who have served and paid the ultimate sacrifice. Dr. Ream said, I think it's really good. We do it every year. In the recovery period, it's important that we recover our memory of those who have gone before us and use it as a base to travel into the future with more hope. And there's a picture of the Mayor of Winchester and Councillor Derek Green. And there is like a very low, probably about a couple, few inches of sort of like fencing, and then there's three major crosses, and then lots of the little wooden crosses that you can get when you donate to the British Legion. Yes, it looks very pleasant and peaceful.
An Alsford man hopes for answers over imprisonment. An Alsford man could soon have answers over his first imprisonment, during the First Gulf War. Clive Earthy was a cabin services officer on a British civilian flight, which landed in Kuwait during the Iraqi invasion in 1990. Along with 386 passengers, he was held hostage for several months by the Iraqis. He has been pressing for the results of the 1993 government inquiry, Operation Sandcastle, to be published. BA Flight 149 landed in Kuwait for a scheduled stopover on its way to Asia, the only plane to land at that time, as other airlines diverted their flights. Mr. Earthy has previously said that he remembers a British man in military uniform meeting him at the plane's door on arrival in Kuwait. The man said he had come to meet a group of men on the flight. They disembarked and were never seen again. Mr. Earthy of The Dean told the Chronicle that tickets had been written for the group of men to travel to Kuwait. The priority was these men who were not fighters. They were seen as observers, and they were seen as a priority over 380 men, women and children, he said. Since 1992, Mr. Earthy has been trying to raise public awareness of the issue and called for the release of the government inquiry. MP Steve Brine tabled a question in the House of Commons. James Heapy, who was the Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for the Armed Forces, answered, I can confirm the Operation Sandcastle report has been sent to the National Archives on the 20th of October 2021 and will be available to view within the next 60 days. It means the report should be out by November 19th. But Mr. Earthy is still uncertain if the whole truth will be published. He said, It has been 30-odd years for the truth to come out from the government. We do know that somebody made a muck-up. Unfortunately, I still suspect that the actual BA Flight 149 and all the passengers held for months will not be in this report. I may be wrong. I hope that Sandcastle is released to the public and it will say that Maggie Thatcher lied to everybody in the country. She knew the men were on there, and she allowed the men to go on the aircraft.
Trainer relief over crusher. A racehorse trainer who has stables near Winchester was left relieved after plans to build a concrete crusher nearby was rejected by planning officers. Chris Gordon, who began training at Morstead in 2007, feared that if the planning application had been granted, he would have been forced to sell and move elsewhere. Mr. Gordon said, Concrete crushers and racehorses simply do not go together. We are very relieved it's all over and are very pleased to be able to continue with our business of training racehorses. On the Chris Gordon Racing Facebook page, it said, We'd just like to let everyone know that the concrete crusher that would have ruined us at Morstead Farm Stables has been refused by an unanimous council decision, which is obviously a huge relief for us. Before the application was rejected, he said, "The stables here were made from reclaimed materials just after World War I, and horses have been trained here for more than 65 years. When I looked to set up my business, I moved here to the South Downs because of the location. It is lovely, healthy and quiet environment. The small industrial estate next door has been as quiet as an industrial estate could ever be, so it's never been a bother." The application was for a general industrial to enable the creation of a soil cleaning and concrete crushing facility at Union 3, Morstead Farm. In a report from Winchester City Council's Director of Planning, it said, "The site is in a sensitive area adjoining racecourse horses training facility and in proximity to a number of dwellings. The application has not demonstrated that no undue detrimental harm would be caused to neighbours. In the absence of robust information, it is considered that conditions are not appropriate, an appropriate mechanism, and would not make an unacceptable development acceptable. A reason for refusal is therefore recommended in this regard." The report stated that a total of 103 objections had been received for the application. One of the reasons for the application's refusal, summarised in the report, said, "There is an established concrete crusher 3 miles away, Spitfire Link." Another explained the impact it would have on the racehorses. "The impact on the racehorse stables, racehorses, is a material planning consideration, and these impacts have not been assessed. Loud noises and other disturbances can be unsafe for horses and staff working with them." Sorry. "This means Mr. Gordon and the team can continue to operate from the stables at Morstead for the foreseeable future." And there's a photograph of Chris Gordon and his wife Jenny on a couple of really beautiful racehorses with their long glass legs, with their thumbs down sign above showing where the concrete crushing facility would have been.
Rangers scheme. A scheme to help reduce business crime and help make Winchester city centre a safer place for workers, visitors and residents has celebrated its third anniversary. Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, has marked the milestone of the BID Rangers scheme, which is recognised as an example of good practice for other towns and city centres across the country. To date, the scheme has assisted local businesses and recovered over £42,400 worth of stolen goods from offenders in the BID area. The scheme is part of the Winchester Business Crime Reduction Partnership, which aims to reduce low-level crime and antisocial behaviour and to provide additional security in the city centre. The scheme was one of the first of its kind nationally, and it is now often referred to as a flagship scheme that other towns and cities wish to replicate. The Rangers are security trained and accredited and patrol the city centre as part of BID's commitment to providing a safer environment. Jane Bastock, Business Crime Reduction Manager at Winchester BID, said, "The Rangers not only patrol the city centre, but have become a valuable presence for a variety of incidents, attending 4,640 in the last year alone. Incidents range from responding to antisocial behaviour, shoplifting, partnership, working with the police and Winchester City Council, and helping businesses, visitors to the city and members of the community."
And we have a community cafe returning this month. Thanks have been given to those who attended last month's Wanston Community Cafe. The event was held on October the 20th at Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney, with an amazing attendance and some very generous donations. The cafe raised £400 for Blood Cancer UK, which is dedicated to beating blood cancer by funding research and supporting those affected. The cafe will return to Victoria Hall on Wednesday, November the 17th at 9:30 in the morning till noon, last orders at 11:45 a.m. This month, the cafe will be raising funds for Little Hearts Matter, the only national UK charity offering help to anyone affected by the diagnosis of single ventricle heart condition. A spokesman said, "Please do come along to support the community cafe, which is staffed entirely by volunteers. All the cakes are homemade. We have real coffee and plenty of free parking. And this is accompanied by a photograph of some seven ladies and the wonderful homemade cakes they've made, and all smiling very cheerfully to the camera.
Vet chosen as Lib Dems parliamentary candidate. A Winchester vet has been selected as a new parliamentary candidate. Danny Chambers will represent the Liberal Democrats in Winchester and has been given the support of the party's leader. Mr. Chambers works as a veterinary surgeon for Equicall and sits on the council of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, the regulatory body for the UK veterinary profession. He campaigns nationally on animal welfare and mental health issues and is a trustee of a mental health charity. His campaign priorities include supporting local businesses and farmers, tackling climate change and protecting local NHS services. Mr. Chambers said, "I'm honoured to have been selected as the Lib Dem MP candidate for Winchester. My priority is to listen to local people and campaign on the issues that matter to them. I will be on the side of local businesses and farmers who are struggling to find enough staff and face increased costs due to the pandemic and our ability to trade with Europe. People rightly want to protect their local NHS services in Winchester. I will use my campaign experience, having led national campaigns on mental health and animal welfare, to ensure local people are heard on this issue. Voters in Winchester are determined that the government should no longer ignore the biggest threat to our planet, climate change. I will strive to earn the trust of the people of Winchester and prove to them that there is a positive Liberal alternative for Winchester. The work starts now." Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey MP, said, "Danny is a local vet and will be a fantastic local candidate who is committed to listening and helping the people of Winchester. The Conservatives have taken Winchester for granted. In blue wall areas, just like Hampshire, people feel let down by a Conservative party which is out of touch with their values and priorities. The next general election is due in 2024, when sitting MP Steve Brine is defending a majority of 985 from the contest in December 2019. And there's a picture of Danny Chambers holding a very large cat, but with a very sweet expression. It's all, I mustn't make any comment, but it's a very nice picture.
COVID continues to fall steeply. The number of COVID cases in Winchester has been seen a substantial decrease in the 7 days up to November the 9th. Latest figures show that 686 people tested positive for COVID in that period, which is down from 943 the previous week. Also, the average case rate per 100,000 people is down from 749 in the last 7 days to 545 in the latest figures. Excuse me. However, it was also reported that one more person had died within 28 days of a positive COVID test since the start of the pandemic, which brings the number up to 182 since the start of the pandemic. There have only been two COVID deaths in the district since March. Across the area covered by the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, that includes Andover and Basingstoke, and the death toll is 486, up from 438 in March. In the recorded areas around Winchester, 10 of the 13 saw a decrease in COVID cases, with some down over 50%. No areas are now marked in black on the government map, the worst category for the first time since October the 11th. The areas which on Tuesday reported rising COVID cases are Whiteley, Knowl and Wickham, Denmead and Southwick, Stanmore and Hambledon and West Meon. The area with the highest current rate for the 7 days up to November the 3rd is Swanmore, Hambledon and West Meon, with 69 cases, up 41% for 784 per 100,000 people. A total of 13,943 people had been confirmed as testing positive for COVID in Winchester when the UK coronavirus daily dashboard was updated on November the 5th, up from 13,880 on the previous day. The latest figure shows that 93,938 people had received both jabs by November the 3rd, 79% of those aged 12 and over, based on the number of people on the National Immunisation Management Service database. There are fewer COVID patients in local hospitals. On Tuesday, there were 43 positive COVID-19 patients, 29 at Basingstoke, 14 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and none at Andover. That compares to 52 weeks ago, 32 in Basingstoke and 20 in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
The local Floral Society celebrated its 70th anniversary. The sound of cheerful laughter and glasses and cutlery clinking from the Gurkha Museum Gallery last month came from members of the Winchester Floral Design Society and their guests assembled to celebrate the Society's 70th anniversary lunch. Guests were ushered into a room full of beautiful portraits of the royal family and past senior officers and tables decked with tall glass vases full of cascades of white Phalaenopsis orchids and gleaming regimental silver trophies, setting the tone for a sumptuous lunch prepared by the local Little Kitchen Company. It was a delight to have Michael Boyer, a society patron. A toast to Her Majesty, the Queen, was proposed by Mr. Boyer, and also a toast to the Society by the chairman of the Wessex and Jersey, to the Society, who then gave a very interesting history of the Society from its inception to joining NAFAS in March 1952. It was the first formal floral society to be formed by the legendary Mary Pope, the doyenne of flower arrangers. Penny Neyrood, president of the Society, replied to Jean Gittin's excellent talk by thanking her and telling the assembled diners of her amusing journey into flower arranging, from tender teens with her mother to her still active flower arranging to this day. One important advice to flower arrangers was always accept the request to arrange flowers, as you can never tell just where you might be asked to go. She has arranged flowers from humble club arrangings to competitions and even to some very prestigious royal venues. This was followed by cutting into a beautifully decorated cake made by master cake maker Helen Stevens and decorated so exquisitely that members were loath to cut into such a beautiful creation. But they did, and it was equally delicious. Janice Vivish then brought the official part of the day to an end with amusing stories about her travels with her globe-trotting husband. The day ended with the offering of the floral designs to the assembled company in exchange for a donation, which was shared between Winchester Hospice and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, both charities closely supported by the Society and raising £285. And there are several pictures here accompanying the article. Yeah, but one is showing all of the key members of the company there in the beautiful room, and a magnificent shot of the cake, which, as the article said, was magnificently decorated. So everybody seemed to be having a really good time with both the cake and the flower creations.
Fireworks in Winchester and Alresford. Fireworks return in various ways. Winchester saw the continuation of its 63-year-old uninterrupted tradition of holding fireworks night. In Alresford, the traditional torchlight procession and display was held after its cancellation in 2020 due to COVID restrictions. But in Winchester, there was to be no bonfire in Northwall's recreation ground, no parade from the Broadway to the park, and no public announcement of the fireworks launch sites. This was to reduce the chance of large-scale gatherings. For a second year, Light Up Winchester was arranged with two professional fireworks displays set off from private land locations of King's School and Winchester City Football Club at Abbots Barton. Despite the constraints, sales of the night of wax torches met record-breaking levels. The VIP tent at a firework launch site was sold out, and the fireworks were broadcast via Facebook to an audience around the globe. The event is traditionally the largest annual fundraiser in the city and has regularly attracted 20,000 people. The Alsford display at Albury Park was organised by the Rotary Club last Friday. More than 2,000 adults and children took part in the procession with the guy made by the Swan Hotel. In preparation for 6 months by the Rotary Club this year was the first that bookings were taken online, a success, with 85% of sales taken that way and through Oakleaf Stationery on West Street. Final financial results are not known yet, but all profits will go to local and Rotary charities. Across Hampshire, there were many complaints about fireworks scaring animals, with a pony killed in the New Forest after leaping a fence and being struck by a car. And there's lots of pictures, but basically, describing fireworks, it's just great explosions of light and patterns and colours in a dark sky, and everyone thrilled watching them and excited. Children, there's one here with his sparkler and a big grin on his face. We all love sparklers. And there's a guy on West Street, and I can't make out whether it's actually a person with a really sort of sinister guy mask on it or whether it's actually someone who's going to be burnt. A thing that's going to be burnt. And there's torches on the high street. I've never seen these torches before, but they're like sort of very big candles and they all light them and I suppose wave them about. And that's about it, apart from the endless displays of sort of exploding light, which is very exciting and wonderful.
Zara's record attempt resumes after delay. A teenager who went to school in Winchester is trying to be the youngest woman ever to fly round the world solo. Is back underway after she was stuck for a month. Zara Rutherford, who studied at St Swithin's School, set out on her journey on August the 18th and was expected to finish in 3 months, but visa problems and bad weather conditions meant that she was stuck in Alaska from the end of September until October the 31st. Zara's journey was originally projected to finish in the middle of November, but the delays mean she will now be expected to finish on December the 8th in Belgium, which is where she had set off from. Zara arrived at Nome, Alaska, on September the 30th, but couldn't cross the Bering Straits to Russia because her visa would have expired when she arrived, as it meant crossing the international date line. Therefore, she had to wait for a new visa to be delivered, which she got on October the 8th. However, Zara still couldn't leave Nome due to bad weather conditions. They eventually cleared, meaning that she could take off over the Bering Straits to Russia on October the 31st. When she arrived in Russia, Zara posted on her Facebook page, Fly Zolo, finally made it to Russia, just in time before the days started to get too short. So happy to be over the Pacific and onto the second half of the world. First bit of the flight was more challenging. A few snow showers here and there to dodge and some low clouds, but nothing major. Later, it was stunning blue skies all the way. The next leg of the journey will see Zara fly south into Asia, where she will visit South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Thailand and Myanmar, before continuing west towards India. Zara has both British and Belgian nationality and is following in the footsteps of her parents, who are both pilots. She studied at St Swithin's School, and the solo trip is her gap year project before she goes to university, where she plans to study computer science or computer engineering with a long-term ambition of becoming an astronaut. The current female record holder is an American, Chase DeVase, who was 30 at the time of her circumnavigation in 2017, whilst the youngest male record holder was an 18-year-old.
This is quite a big article on the Rheims English Sparkling Harvest, and is accompanied by quite a lot of pictures which look absolutely fantastic. Community rallies for the farm's harvest. The community got behind a vineyard near Alsford to help with this year's harvest following a shortage in labour. Rheims English Sparkling called out to its community for their support to help with the grape picking at their Cheriton vineyards. This year has been challenging for the vineyards in Hampshire, with frosts in the spring and a muggy summer. owner of Rheims English Sparkling, Augusta Rheims, said, "Vintage 2021 has been all about volunteers and teamwork. It's been a challenging year in terms of the weather, persistent spring frosts and a muggy summer, resulting in late ripening and harvest. We were warned of labour shortages, so we asked our community for help, and we were overwhelmed by the response. We enjoyed the company of enthusiastic volunteers. It was a field filled with great conversation, an October sun, and the time sped by as we filled the crates, and we look forward to sharing the wines in a few years' time." And the sparkling wines in Hampshire are of quite a very high quality. In fact, they win lots and lots and lots of competitions. The photographs here show crates of both white grapes and black grapes, and the volunteers working in the field picking them. So it looks like it was a really, really good day doing this in the autumn sun.
Snowdon Expedition for Winchester School Pupils. Pupils and staff from a school near Winchester recently completed an expedition to climb to the highest mountain in Wales. Year 5 pupils at Princess Mead School were given the opportunity to climb Snowdon, as the school's headmaster had always wanted every child to be given the opportunity to climb a mountain by the time they leave school in year 6. Peter Thacker, headmaster at Princess Mead School, said, "The natural highs of the country's highest places are one of the most exhilarating experiences we offer our children at Princess Mead. We are proud to offer the challenge of climbing the country's highest peaks, amongst others, to all our pupils before the time they depart. Not only do our mountain challenges develop a child, they also give them skills and resilience to take them into senior school and beyond." Gillian Jones, head of wellbeing at Princess Mead, described the expedition itself and the physical and mental health benefits it had for everyone involved. She said, "Although we chose an achievable route, this was not without its difficulties. Sometimes we needed all four limbs to haul ourselves up vertical parts of the route. Small legs needed to stretch up large rocks. Without doubt, limbs became very tired, especially on the descent. We all marvelled at the amazing views, and with every step we worked together to achieve our goal and reach the top of Snowdon. Of course, the benefits of exploring the mountain goes much deeper than increasing our fitness levels and enjoying the views. Our pupils increased their self-confidence, resilience and self-reliance, not to mention the huge impact on their future development and mental health." Year 5 pupil Max Stuckey, 10, said, "We had a brilliant time. Everyone enjoyed themselves and made it to the top and back safely. It was so good to see friends experience climbing a mountain for the first time. We were so excited nearing the top to see the clouds disappear and then the amazing views and seeing what we had all achieved." And there's pictures of the gathering of the children, obviously down at the bottom by a stream with lovely green trees and mossy rocks. And then them climbing up, good luck to them, and then them all at the top, waving with their hands in the air in the most brilliant blue sky.
Christmas fair planned by charity. A Winchester dance charity will be running a free Christmas fair in December. Move Momentum will be running the fair in collaboration with Unit 12 in Winnell on December the 12th between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. There will be a variety of stalls from local businesses, a Santa's Grotto, festive performances from the Move Momentum classes, plus some guest performances and lots of festive food and hot drinks. Tickets for Santa's Grotto will be priced at £3.50 and must be booked in advance via Eventbrite. Move Momentum is inviting local businesses to purchase a stall at the mini Christmas market. The stalls are priced at £15 each and can be purchased by contacting Kerry at movemomentum.co.uk. Amanda Watkinson, Chief Executive of Move Momentum, said, "We're really looking forward to welcoming everyone to our Christmas fair. It's been a strange and at times difficult year, so we're really looking forward to getting everyone together to have some festive fun. We can't wait to welcome everyone to the free event and hope to see lots of you there." And that's at Unit 12, which is where we're broadcasting from.
And here is some notice of a young driver's class at the barracks. a specialist driver training scheme, which allows 10 to 17-year-olds to get behind the wheel, is launching at a new Winchester venue. Young Driver opened at Worthy Down Barracks on Saturday when the car park was transformed into a realistic road system so youngsters could work on a range of driving skills and manoeuvres. Events will run on selected weekend dates throughout the year. Young Driver is the UK's largest provider of pre-17 driving lessons, having sold over 1 million lessons at more than 70 venues across the UK, including West Quay in Southampton. Youngsters have lessons in new, dual-controlled Vauxhall Corsa SE Premium with highly qualified, approved driving instructors. A road system is created along with special areas to practice manoeuvres such as steering control and parking. The emphasis of the lessons is on safety and fun, and encouraging youngsters to consider how to drive responsibly, giving them time to perfect driving skills such as gear changes, braking and steering without the pressures of public roads. Sue Waterfield, head of marketing at Young Driver, said, "We are really excited to be launching at Worthy Down. This is a much larger site than our others in the local area, providing plenty of opportunities for youngsters to try out lots of different driving skills and techniques, whether they're a beginner or have already had a few lessons at another of our venues. Half-hour or one-hour-long lessons must be booked in advance, and prices start from £44.99. And if you know of anybody that might be interested in doing this, then you can call 0333 577 9010. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a young girl there, a young teenage girl, at the wheel of the car, and looks very, very excited.
And this one from the Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club, headed "Wildlife Spotted as Winter Approaches." Despite the clocks turning back, Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club members captured some vibrant photos this week. The frosty landscape is a familiar sight at this time of the year, with Andrew Coombs' photo showing a patch of red sky. It's not actually red, I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. Wildlife was a main subject for our photographers, with the incredible colour of the kingfisher and two spotting deer. Photos posted here may be used in the Hampshire Chronicle and its respective publications, websites and social media channels. By posting pictures in the group, you give consent for publication. Portraits, landscapes, wildlife shots, human interest images and news pictures. We welcome it all. And there are pictures of these deer, this fallow deer, and there's some turning their heads back to look at the photographer with a sort of background of the bracken and the pale green grass. The frosty Stockbridge morning really is so beautiful because you've got the frosted ground and then a sort of gentle misting over the ground and behind it a watercolour wash of a sky with pale yellows and pinks going up into a very pale blue, not red. And then there's a snow bunting, which I don't think I've ever seen one, but they are a charming little bird with a sort of black and tawny dappled wings and back, and then the front is completely white, which I suppose you would call the snow bit. There is a plant that none of us can identify, but it's headed Nature's Fireworks. And I thought it was a seed head, but actually it is an actual flower because you can see the stamens, and it's just a burst of all these little arms coming out with the flowers on the top and then the stamens bursting out of each flower. And to get the size of it, I think I can see a tiny ant on it, so it's actually quite big. And the autumn colours in Abbey Gardens, a beautiful tree with the most luminous yellow leaves turning. The wonderful kingfisher with its orange breast and very vibrant blue head and back. And a wonderful picture of berries, which they say are for the birds, which is good because there's a lot of them.
Graduation Day celebrations. University Centre Sparsholt celebrated the class of 2020-2021 in a day of long-awaited graduation ceremonies in Winchester Cathedral. Graduates, lecturers, family, friends and supporters were able to finally join together and celebrate after postponement due to COVID-19 restrictions. Students were presented with their well-earned degrees and prizes for individual endeavour and academic success as the class of 2020-2021 embarked on the next stage of their lives. Principal Julie Milburn reviewed Sparshot's achievement through the year. She said, "The past two academic years have been very successful despite the restrictions of COVID-19. I'm delighted to see over 550 qualifications being presented at today's two ceremonies. Many of our students are already in employment, often hundreds of miles from Winchester and overseas, already excelling in their chosen field." And there are a number of photographs. There's one of Roxanne Courtley Chun, won the Ploughman Trophy, and she's there holding her silver trophy. Sam Crooms with assistance dog Max, who's an Alsatian. Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. Guest of Honour, Dr. Mike Short. And the graduates coming down the main aisle of Winchester Cathedral. And, of course, the traditional group of students throwing their caps in the air.
Well, that's a nice, joyful story to end on. So that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
And Norma York.
Bye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.